I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hello world and welcome back to another episode of Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. So, update on Doggate 2020? I don't know what to call it. The dog from last week. Yeah, she's my dog now. It was a wild turn of events. And now she's mine. And I've named her Pepper Potts. And she is the sweetest, and she has so many of the same mannerisms as my German Shepherd. It's bizarre. But when I took her to the vet the other day to get her shots and all that kind of stuff, somebody there said she thought that she was an Australian Shepherd Husky mix. So I think I'm going to have to do a DNA test on this dog because I desperately want to know what she is. But she's great, and she's settling in, and you know, she's been getting me up at 5:30 in the morning every day. She also has discovered how to open the door that leads to where I record. So if you hear rolling doors, that's her coming in and out. Yeah. Anyway, it's been a good week. I'm going to go see Top Gun after this recording, which I'm very excited to see. And yeah, I've been back at Trapeze, which is great and super fun, and I love it, and I'm getting better every week, and I'm super proud of myself. So there's that, and that's about it. Make sure that you're subscribed to the show wherever you're listening to it right now, and leave us some love. And let's get into it. Today on the show, we have Jacqueline Zima. You know her as Bobby Spencer on General Hospital. You may have also seen her on The Bay or Misguided or some of the several films that she's been in over the years. She's fantastic and a total icon, and I was very excited to talk to her. So here's my conversation with Jacqueline. And welcome to the show, Miss Jacqueline Zima.
Thank you so much, Jillian, for inviting me to join you today.
Thank you. You know, my grandmother
watched General Hospital every day of her life, and therefore my mother has watched nearly every episode as well. So I feel like I have grown up with you on all of my family members' televisions.
Well, thank you. You know what? My grandma watched too, and my mom. And so, you know, I think that's validation that soap operas are definitely a generational thing. And I think that's probably one of the big reasons why we've maintained our audience and our status 100%. In the industry.
Yeah, totally. So. Because it has that like nostalgic feel. I mean, I'll never forget coming home from, you know, kindergarten or whatever and going over to grandma's house and getting my Triscuits and my chocolate milk and sitting there and watching General Hospital with her. I mean, that was just a normal weekday.
That was same for me. Now, I'm a lot older than you are. So in my day, I come home from elementary school because we'd go home on lunch hour. And, you know, in those days, we didn't even have a clicker. I mean, there were three channels, you know, ABC, NBC, and CBS. There weren't a whole lot of choices. You had to pick one of three. And you sat in the middle of the floor, you know, with my lunch tray. And my mom and my grandma would come out once a week to help my mom with us kids. And we'd watch, you know, we'd watch it in black and white.
Wow.
And so I have incredible memories. And when I decided that I was thinking when I got older and I wanted to get a, you know, job and think, what am I going to do to earn a living? I was in college at NYU and I was sitting in a bagel nosh with my boyfriend at the time. Right? And I said, you know what? I'm going to get a job on a soap opera because in those days they were a half an hour long. And I thought if you were on a soap, you only had to work half an hour a day. I would have talked about nice college courses.
That's amazing. Oh my God.
But wow. Here's the funny thing. I had been taking a lot of acting lessons. You know, I was in drama in high school and all the plays, and I got, you know, the leads in the plays. And so I had a lot of training. It wasn't like I just, you know, showed up one day with no training.
Right.
But yeah, so I auditioned for a show and got the offer. So there you go.
And that was One Life to Live, right?
No. Do you want to hear my audition story?
Oh my God, yes. Yes.
Okay. So I have a few audition stories. I have to tell you though, Jillian, I have not really auditioned much in my career. I would say I had one good audition and it carried me for the next 8 years on TV.
I mean, but, talk about like right place, right time, and talent all combined. Boom.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, here's the kicker. Okay, so I go in, my agent calls Kaplan Vite at the time and says, oh, go on over to Ryan's Hope is looking for somebody. And I knew I wanted to be on soap, so it was like perfect, you know. They're looking for Renee Zabo was the character name. If anybody remembers, I don't, you know, wasn't at the time watching Ryan's Hope. I was watching different soaps, but I knew it was very popular. And so I'm in the office. Now in those days, they didn't put you on tape when it was a contract role. So
right.
It was a big, you know, contract role with a promise for a really good guarantee. In those days, they would guarantee you anywhere when you were starting out, like 1.5 episodes per week, up to 3 episodes per week. That was the deal. And you got you got X amount of money. And then at the end of the year, and you'd go on 13-week cycles. So they would hire you, even though they would give you like a 2 or 3 year contract on their end, you were in 13-week cycles so that anytime when the end of a 13-week cycle, they could let you go. So you were only firm for 13 weeks on your deal. That's all the networks did that at the time. That's how it worked. It was a big deal. Like after you were on for like maybe like 2 or 3 year your second contract, they would push you to a 26-week cycle. So then you'd have 26 weeks guaranteed. Hallelujah. And then finally you get to the 1 year pay or play. And then when you're on for a million years, they ask you to sign for a very long time and it's a lock. You know what I mean? But it takes a long time in Soapland to get to that. So anyway, I know that was a little segue crazy, but anyway, random.
It's super interesting. But I feel like nobody really talks about how that process works because, you know, a lot of soap opera fans, it's just like you watch and like sometimes your favorite characters are gone and sometimes they're here and sometimes they're killed and then back in a few months. So you never really know.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, I think, for people to hear like how, you know, strenuous it is for actors as well to sit there and go, geez, is my contract going to be picked up or am I going to have to find another job? Like, that's stressful.
Yeah, it's all contracts and it's deals and it depends, yeah, on every situation. So anyway, okay, so I go over to Ryan's Hope. And in those days, they didn't put anybody on camera. You just read, you know, for the producer. I wasn't even reading with another actor. I get the, and you know, and in those days, there's no computer. There's no right. fax machines. You literally had to like drive over to the studio. Well, I was in New York, so I didn't drive. I took the subway and then, you know, walk over, get the sides. And you literally get the sides like five minutes before you walk into the room. So wow. Thank goodness, you know, I was in college, I was in school, I had a good memory because I was used to like learning things and studying, so I could memorize really, really fast. So I'm out in the waiting room for like 5 minutes with these sides, and it's like a really long monologue. It's like a page and a half of a monologue. And I'm like, oh gosh, can I shove these lines in my brain in 5 minutes and not have to be looking at the page? Now, I was young at the time, so I wasn't wearing glasses. I could actually see the pages. But you know, when you're peaking, the performance isn't so good. So I tried to memorize them as good as I could. And then he let, you know, I would go into the office, and it was the executive producer's office. And he sat behind his big, you know, very important desk. And I sat on the other side of the desk. There were two chairs. I picked a chair, sat down. He said, are you ready? And I said, yes. And I started to do the monologue. And it was a very dramatic monologue. It was and you know, I got into like the first part and the tears are flowing. I'm like, oh God, you know, I was crying because they want to see on a soap opera. I guess it was going to be a dramatic
obviously, thriller. Yeah. You have to be able to cry on a soap opera. Come on.
Yes. And when the director, you know, they have a scene and that's what they want. So thank goodness that was going well and I was feeling really good. And I got into like the first, like maybe the first three quarters of the first page, and his phone rang on the desk and he answered the phone.
No.
In the middle of my crying monologue. I'm like, oh, I guess it's not going as well as I thought it was. So that was that. He said, thank you very much. Walk me to the door. I get out to the street. Now, there's no cell phones in these days, but there's a phone booth. So I immediately go to the phone booth and I take out my, you know, 25 cents or 50 cents or whatever it was to call my agent, who was Gloria Dolans at Kaplan Vite Agency. I go, Gloria. So I thought it was going well, but apparently not. I was halfway through my monologue and he phone rang and he answered. She said, oh dear, that's okay. He offered you the job. He answered the phone because he knew he was already going to hire you. He didn't need to see anymore. And they offered me the job.
Oh my God.
So then she says, yeah. So then she says, so you want to run on over to One Life to Live because they're looking for somebody over there. And, you know, they said they would, you know, be happy, you know, to see you go over there. So I go over to One Life to Live. I had done an under five on One Life to Live, like, I don't know, the week before. For those people who don't know, an under five is when you have five lines or less on a show. So it's not really considered an extra role because you actually do speak, but five lines or less. So it's a different pay scale than an actual guest star role with a whole scene. So they pay you less for an under five. So I had one under five on One Life to Live the week before, but it was a really good one. And with Marco Dane, if anybody remembers watching One Life to Live a million years ago, it was a really good scene where I was a waitress and I walked by his table and he went to grab my butt and I turned around and I said, don't you ever do that again. That's so rude. Yes. And I guess they liked. So I went over to One Life to Live and I met with Doris Quinlan, the producer, and they offered me a contract role on One Life to Live. I didn't even audition.
Oh my God. So now you have two contracts being offered to you.
Actually, they booked me for like another under five, but offered me the contract until it was negotiated. And so then I had two contracts. So believe it or not, the first audition that I ever actually did for Ryan's Hope, I didn't take the job. I took the One Life to Live. They were offering me One Life to Live. I love both shows. And I said to my agent, which one should I choose? She said, well, that's really up to you. She said, One Life to Live was offering you $25 more per episode. So it's a little bit more money. And the guarantee, I think, was, I forget whether it was two or three a week, shows a week. So it would have come out to like $75 more a week, which in those days, you know, was a lot more money. It was a lot more money. You know, it was like seven times, they say seven times from those days of what the money is now. So seven times 75 right. is a lot more money than me in those days. So I took the One Life to Live deal. There you go.
Wow.
And when I started on One Life to Live, Doris Quinlan, whom I adored, she was amazing, amazing producer and a kind, wonderful, really brilliant, smart woman. She called me into the office and she said, okay, dear, no, you have your contract. I signed it. You're going to be working with Jameson Parker. We're going to do like a love story. God, my first day on the show. I had like four scenes in bed with Jameson Parker, like 10 pages with like just like a cami on, and you know, they had to pull down with no straps so they could pull down the sheet at the end of the love scene and show a bare back. It would look like you were nude. I was so nervous.
Oh my gosh.
Like I was grow up. I was so nervous. But Doris had said to me, look, we're going to hire you and give you like this. It's a big storyline. You're going to be working a lot with a lot of lines. We know you could do it. But I just want you to know it's an arc. And an arc means that, you know, you'll be really written in heavy for like the first 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not supposed to tell you this, but we're going to kill off the character. That was the plan. So I don't want you to feel that you haven't done a good job. I'm just going to have to call you back in here within another 3 to 4 or 5 months and tell you that you've just, you know, shot your last show or you're getting the script for your last show. And I don't want you to take that as you haven't done a good job. That's just what the plan is. So kind. I mean, I never told anybody.
How
it was a total secret.
Sweet of her to do that for you.
Because to be so young, it was my first job, you know, my first profession outside of a couple commercials.
Right.
I'll bore you with those stories if you want to hear them. But it was so the confidence of being a young person and not letting her set me up to feel like, oh my God, I'm, you know, on top of the world for 3 months and then boom. So there we go. And then I remember going to her with all these lines, like the first show. I was so nervous. Oops, sorry, that's my phone. I will silence my phone. I apologize.
There we go. I mean, it happens. So, it happens more than you would think.
So anyway, where was I?
Doris.
So Doris was absolutely kind and wonderful. There was no social media in those days. So really, who was I going to tell? But I didn't even tell anybody on the set. I didn't even tell Jameson. You know, when I was working with Jameson, Parker, and all these scenes. And I went into her the day when I had that 3 scenes of 10 pages each. It had to be in the bed. And I was like literally in the bathroom feeling. And I went, I don't know if I'm cut out for this. Like, I'm so nervous. I feel like I'm going to get sick before we shoot the show. I'm not having a whole lot of fun here. Maybe I'm not ready. She said, dear, you're ready. She said, everybody feels that way in the beginning. Give it a month. There are a lot of people who want the job. If after a month you come back to me and tell me that you're really unhappy, we'll make an adjustment. But for now, you're going to be fine. And then sure enough, I did like maybe the first couple weeks, like a lot of shows, a lot of lines. And then Jameson was so great. He would run lines with me. The people on One Life to Live, I mean, I just remember, you know, Michael Storm and Erica Slezak. I mean, there were amazing people on that show. George Reinhold. They were also nice to me. And I felt like part of the family, and then the nerves went away. The jitter, well, you know, we always get little jitters, but the not having any fun.
The real, the real terrifying ones where you're like, oh my God, there's a camera and I have to perform and everyone is watching me. Oh my God.
Because, you know, on One Life to Live, we didn't, it was all live on tape. And what I mean that is there was no stopping. There was no editing. Like if somebody forgot a line, make it up as you go along, because there was no editing. We had to give our cameras to the news, to the 6 o'clock news, to go on at 6 o'clock.
Stop it.
So we started shooting at 5, and we had to be off the air at 6, because boom, they pushed a switch in the control room, and the news had our control booth. So there were no stopping. So if we had to get changed in those days, you know, the shows, you maybe had two or three wardrobe changes on one show. We would joke. You always had to change the top half of your outfit first, because if you didn't have time to do the bottom, they'd just shoot you tight. And when you were doing the scene, there was a stage manager standing like outside of the, right in front of the sets. And if, you know, you needed to stretch the scene to go, because when your show was over, he'd be going like stretch, this would mean stretch, like talk slower. And then they give you a countdown, 10, 9, 8, 7, how many seconds you had to go out. Or if you were dragging, they'd start going like this, like 30 seconds before, telling you, you got 30 seconds to finish the scene. So you had to talk faster. So that, let me tell you, Jillian, that was the best training in the world. Talk about, you know, what you have to
do.
Honestly,
I did not realize that soaps were like live back then. I had no idea.
Yeah, they were.
Oh my God.
So, yeah. And in those days, of course, they were only a half an hour long. They weren't an hour long yet. They switched to, when I came out to do General Hospital, we switched to first 45 minutes. We shared an hour and a half. I think we shared with One Life to Live for a while, or One Life to Live and All My Children. You know, it was All My Children, One Life to Live, GH. So we shared time. Yeah. We went to 45 minutes and then we went to an hour, you know, but that took a few years. That was a while.
So
are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Get 15% back at hundreds of stores, and it's all happening this week, May 6th to May 13th. It's the perfect time to shop for everything on your list for spring and summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel. I know I'm using this week to stock up on some warmer weather essentials at Ray-Ban and Ulta, and I love that Rakuten even helps me save on travel at sites like hotels.com. Rakuten really is the best way to shop, and you can save even more by stacking cash back on top of deals. Plus, during Big Give Week, that cash back is bigger than ever. With Rakuten, membership is free. And when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cash back boost. That's an extra 10% cash back on top of the 15% cash back. You won't see higher cash back rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app. R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
So when you get killed off from One Life to Live, how do you make that transition from that show out to Los Angeles where General Hospital is?
I never auditioned. So, okay. So they're looking for, which I didn't know, because again, there was no Twitter or Instagram or social media. I didn't know they were looking for somebody on you know, in General Hospital, they had been testing, screen testing girls. And I learned this later because Ken Schreiner, who plays Scotty Baldwin on GH, told me he was testing with girls to be like his love interest on the show.
Yeah.
But I had no clue. So I'm sitting in the theater watching Beatlemania, which was a big show on Broadway at the theater in those days. And sitting next to me is Fred Silverman, who was the head of programming for ABC. And we're talking. And he looks at me and he goes, "You're funny. How would you like to be on a sitcom?" And I said, "Well, you know, in those days, sitcoms, you kind of had to be like a bubble, funny girl, you know, silly. And
right.
I just didn't want to do that." I said, "Well, actually, you know, I'm on the soap opera, you know, One Life to Live. But Murray, who was my boyfriend, he was special consultant for Beatlemania. So that's how I was there. Got to go out to California to the show, Beatlemania's opening at the Schubert Theater in Century City." I said, "And you know what? They're about to kill me off on One Life to Live. I was on for 2.5 years, just about to go on to 3 years. And they were finally going to, they had stretched out that storyline as long as they could. And then Doris heard that Murray, you know, was going out to California, was go. So they wrapped up my storyline. I said, "And I'm going to be free like in, you know, 3-4 weeks to go out." And the next day, I get a call from the network, Jackie Smith, who was head of daytime programming at ABC at the time, whom I adored. She was so lovely. She said, "So they're looking, Douglas Marland is the head writer for a show called General Hospital." I said, "Oh, I know General Hospital, yeah." She said, "Well, he lives in Connecticut, but he'd like to come into New York to talk with you about maybe joining the show. They have a character that he thinks you could do very well, and he's creating the character, and he would, you know, he would create it for you." So Douglas Marland drove to my apartment in New York, where Murray and I lived, sat on the floor, because in those days, I mean, you know, it was all lavender. My walls were my rugs. I had cushions on the floor. It was like very, like, cool boho. And there's Douglas Marland, this classy, elegant, famous, friggin' awesome writer, comes and sits on the floor like it's nothing in my lavender living room. And, you know, he had penciled me in for like a 20-minute meeting. And I said, "Well, how long do you have before you have to jump?" And he goes, "Well, you know, 20 minutes or as long as it takes for us to get to know one another." He stayed for like 3 hours. We sat and we just talked and we were laughing and talking. He was so nice. He was so amazing. And of course, then the next day they called and I got the offer to go to General Hospital.
Wow.
So they offered me, this is how good we got treated in those days, 3 sets of first class tickets back and forth, because I had to go immediately for wardrobe fitting, and then they let me come back, and then I had to go down to, you know, get settled, like my dog came on the plane, and then come back, and then the 3rd set of tickets was, you know, two first class tickets each time. The last time was to pack up my apartment, you know, move, like, tell the doorman I'm going, and the concierge, and get the car. We had a car in the garage and all that. Move and pack up and go. And they put me up in a bungalow in the Beverly Hills Hotel for 3 months. They gave me a limousine and a driver. Bobby Grillo was my friend and limo driver for 3 months. And the reason why I got the bungalow was because we had a German shepherd named Ruffian who, you know, they couldn't go in the normal hotel because you can't have a German shepherd. So they gave me a big, beautiful 2-bedroom bungalow for Ruffian and us. And that was it. I mean, then I started, and Ken tells this story, and I don't remember this, but he said, "Oh my God, they gave me the limo because I didn't have my car out yet, you know, and I ended up, we ended up getting rid of that car. And I had at least a car. So they gave me the limo to use full time." And he said, "Oh, you drove up in this limo and we're wondering who is this? Who's getting out of this, you know, who's coming in the limo?" He said, and now he goes, "That was my first impression of you getting out with this, all this." And I had brown hair as Lana. So I dyed my hair red for Bobby because I wanted Bobby to be bouncier. And I had gained as much weight as I could for Lana because Lana had alcohol and drug problems, you know, when she was going off One Life to Live. So I wanted like a more puffy, like, look.
Right.
And then
right.
for Bobby, I wanted to be energetic and bouncy, like completely different, really intelligent, smart, and peppy. So I lost that weight. I mean, I didn't eat for like, I think, 2 days. I had 1 day in between. I went off, and literally they were having me dye my scenes on One Life to Live were airing as I was like Lana McLean was dying on One Leg to Live, I was popping off the elevator on General Hospital in my student nurse's uniform, and the shows were airing back to back. And they went, oh my God, we didn't know that we didn't realize they were airing back to back, but the audience loved it. They were like, oh, wait.
Right.
You know,
they're like, is there a connection here?
Yeah, a connection here. And the tag end of the scene, you know, was like Bobby with brown hair, you know, a little heavier to, Lana with brown hair popping into, you know, Bobby. So that was just very lucky for me that I guess it got a little bit of attention in the network because they were all like, they didn't like it at first, but then they went, well, what the heck? The ratings.
Everybody loved it.
People liked it. They liked it. They're tuning in.
Wow.
And Gloria and just come on GH, and show was about to be canceled. It was not doing well. The ratings were low, and all of a sudden Ken and Jeannie and I got this big storyline, and ratings started popping up, and they brought in Gerald Gordon from New York, who was on The Doctors. I think he was a big deal on The Doctors. They brought him, and all of a sudden people started watching GH again. Gloria Monty was brilliant. She just knew how to great story, you know.
And here you are 6,000 episodes later as Bobby. I mean, that's like, I can't even think about how many hours that takes to do over 6,000 episodes of a show. I mean, that's such, it's so incredible. It's so incredible. Like, not many people can say that about, you know, one single show. I think there's probably only a handful of people in the soap world who can even say that, where it's like, yeah, I've done this many hours on this. This is, it's huge.
I think it's probably only on our show, Leslie Charlson's been on. Like, Leslie Charlson, who plays Monica, Ken Schreiner, Scotty, Jeannie Francis, of course, Laura, and trying to think in our little group, I think we're the longest.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and then you have like Stuart Damon before he passed had been on for many, many years. You know what I mean? And then you've got like Christina Wagner, you know what I mean? Who was on for a long time, Lynn Herring, but they came on after, you know, later. So they don't have as many episodes, but they had a lot of airtime. So we've been fortunate. I mean, I just feel I am so freaking grateful to, you know, have this incredible career. I have two daughters who are grown that I got to stay home and be with and not have to travel or go to Europe or go to Canada to shoot things. You know what I mean? I could be mom. They would come to the set with me. I would nurse them. Both my daughters were on my boob. Cassie for 12 months, Lacey for 14 months. Lacey got an extra 2 months because I was shooting an after school special in Montana for ABC at the time. And it was freezing cold. And I ended up at 4 o'clock in the morning because I had 5 a.m. set calls, you know, to get into makeup and hair. So she got an extra 2 months on my boob. Because I was up in the morning and go, okay, eat now.
Oh my gosh.
What a gift. And I remember
a gift, truly. I mean, and you've done so many other things too outside of this. I mean, recently you've been heavily involved in the web series and indie series world with Misguided and The Bay, and I just saw you at the Indie Series Awards. I mean, it's nice to be able to, you know, I feel like when somebody like you comes into the indie series world, it brings not only like a credibility, but it's like a blessing of like, you're doing the right thing. Well done.
Yeah. Thank you. It's life is like that. You know, I think you know how life goes. You never know what's up next. And what I've learned or what I've seen over the years is that you come to all of these crossroads and you got to pick this or that, you know, especially when in the beginning, when you're young, you like this different audition. I mean, I remember the time when I was auditioning for, you know, the Ryan's Hope and the GH, there was also Laugh-In was looking for somebody. Goldie Hawn got. Saturday Night Fever wanted me to test for the Carolyn Gorney role, the girl that danced with him. Same thing.
Wow.
So all these opportunities. And I said, no, I'm gonna go with the soap because I knew I wanted to have a family eventually. And I knew I wanted, you know, to be home. And I thought there's better training in there. And I had been studying with Wynn Hanman, American Place Theater in New York. And Wynn said to me, don't take that soap opera contract. He said to me, this gave me so much confidence, you have the potential to be a great actress. If you go on that soap opera, it's going to ruin you. You're just going to have to like churn out a lot of stuff every day. And I said, yeah, so what? I should turn down this incredible opportunity to work every day to what? To like take a job that's just for money in between?
Right.
You know, I love theater, but, you know, being a peon young actress, you don't make any money in theater when you're young doing off-Broadway shows, you know. I said, I have to earn a living. No, you don't. I mean, even now, you know, I've done a few, you know, like plays, Equity Waiver Theater. You don't get paid for those. I mean, you don't make.
No.
You can't
no. Those 99-seat Equity Theaters where you're just like, I'm just, here's my gas stipend.
Yeah. And they're fun to do creatively, but you can't live on the money, you know, so you have to figure out. Yeah.
Wow, I think I could talk to you for literal hours because you are so fun and you have such great stories. But I mean, thank you so much for coming on. I feel like I've learned so much from you and it's been such a cool, like, I don't know, learning experience for me to hear the backstories of some of the shows that were so influential in my younger years.
Aw, thank you, Jillian. Thank you. Look at our hair. Do we have the same color hair?
I think we might.
I noticed that, when I saw you with the other ladies at the party, I was looking at your hair. I was thinking, I like her color hair. I wish I could get, I was going to ask you for your formula. And then I switched my formula to make it a little brighter because it was getting faded. So you look great. Yeah. I just have to tell you, you're beautiful.
Oh, thank you. You too. oh my God. Okay. Well, it's been so lovely talking to you. How can people follow you on social media to stay up to date on all things Jackie?
Oh, okay. So Instagram, I know different ones. Jacqueline, JACKLYN.Zeman, ZEMAN. And on Twitter, I'm Jackie Zeman, JACKIEZEMAN. So.
Perfect. I'm going to have you back on the show at some point because I feel like there's so much more to talk about. But it was such a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Jackie for coming on the show. Such a fun time talking with her. Make sure to follow the show wherever you're listening to it now and leave some love, leave some rates, leave us some reviews. I don't know who's on next week. I forget, but there will be somebody. So tune in then, and as always, thanks for coming in.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.